This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. It's better
over here. Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on a required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
I'll be back later this week. I'm Dave Cohen. Glad to be with you today. And we'll continue the conversations we've been having. But joining us now, Guy Williams, president of Gulf Coast Bank and Trust, to help us navigate the confusing world of economics and so many other things. How you doing, Guy?
Hey, Dave. Good to be with you.
Yeah, it's Monday, no doubt, and I know folks are frustrated right now. If you're on the Crescent City Connection, sit tight because you're not going anywhere for a while. We have a nasty crash that includes an overturned 18-wheeler on the West Bank side of the connection. So if you've got to get across the river, the ferry, the Huey P. Long, or the I-310 are your best options. We've seen a large number of emergency vehicles responding. We'll keep you posted on that. And, of course, the Saints lost yesterday, and a lot of people still dragging because of that. How are you, Guy?
Doing well. My advice is just watch LSU and skip the Saints until they learn how to tackle. I agree with Deuce. You got to do the fundamentals.
Amen. Learn to tackle and catch. Those would be two of the big things to add. You know, I keep seeing everywhere I look that inflation is the lowest it's been in years. And the truth of the matter is inflation's not actually going down. We're not seeing deflation. It's just the rate of increase has gotten lower, right?
Exactly. And that's what frustrates a lot of people, because if your salary is not going up and inflation goes up slowly, let's say 2%, 2.5%, you're still losing ground each month. And until prices begin to go down, you actually can't purchase as much as you used to. And that's the frustration. And I think when politicians tell people, oh, good news, inflation's down, people don't hear that, well, the rate of growth is down. What they're hearing is, well, prices are down, and they're not. And that's one of the challenges. And, of course, inflation only measures a big basket of goods. It doesn't measure what you actually spend your money on. And one of the things that they leave out is energy and food. Well, we all buy gas almost every week, and we also buy food every week.
And so it feels like food has been the thing that has seen more inflation, at least of the things that most of us buy, than anything else.
It's true, and it's continuing to go up, and that's a real challenge. I mean, thank goodness the dock worker strike ended. If that hadn't, bananas would have been off the menu, and coffee and things like that would have gone up. But that's still a problem potentially in January when this temporary extension comes up. But right now, people are still facing very high prices for everyday items, and it's really frustrating. The other thing is there's some things looming that are going to be a challenge. There is only one insurance market. It's a global market, and when you have two big expensive hurricanes, that pushes insurance cost, and that's already been a challenge for us, and we can expect that to go up. But the other challenge is when a hurricane occurs, once you've done the basic saving of life and rescuing people that need to be rescued, then the cleanup occurs, which requires massive numbers of trucks and workers, Then the rebuilding occurs, which requires, once again, massive amounts of supplies. And those things tend to be inflationary because you've got an unusual demand to replace an awful lot of things that you didn't expect to replace.
And
you know, folks in Tampa that have...
In both of these hurricanes that we're seeing Florida, Georgia, and the Carolinas now recover from, where initially we thought, whew, not as bad as we feared. It wasn't worst-case scenario, but as we learn more and more about what's been happening, there is some serious devastation, and it's going to be both are going to be very costly disasters.
Exactly, because these are places that didn't normally flood. So people have lost, you know, the carpet, the flooring. And when you have a foot of water, it's just enough to ruin the furniture. So it soaks up into the couch. You have to throw it away. When the power's out for a while, we all know what that does to your refrigerator and the contents. So that ends up getting thrown away. And all those things have to be replaced, which were not anticipated to be replaced. So it is going to put a lot of pressure on people that do roofs, people that do construction, and there'll be tremendous demand for those things, which is all likely to push inflation back to a higher level than what we've been used to the last few months.
And while the rate of inflation has not been as excessive as we saw over the last couple of years, we are still, of course, seeing inflation. Do you remember a time we ever saw deflation?
You do have deflation very rarely. It's normally in a horrible crisis situation. When we had the financial crisis of 2008, you had deflation. When the COVID shutdowns occurred, you had deflation because suddenly there was no demand. Things like airline seats, you know, nobody wanted to fly. And so things like that were readily available. And you remember when the middle seats were kept empty on airplanes?
Yes.
Seems like forever ago, but that was sort of cool. Not good for the airlines, but great for the travelers.
Yeah, but if the airlines don't survive, well, it's not good for anybody. So,
no, and they can't run their business with an empty middle seat. We don't all want to pay the prices that we'd have to pay if they kept that middle seat empty all the time. But unless you have a big crisis, like a financial crisis, like a COVID shutdown, you don't typically have deflation. That's very unusual.
So what should we expect, inflationarily speaking, as we move forward and see what happens in the near future?
Well, we've got a couple of issues, as we talked about. The cost of housing is one of the biggest challenges. So housing has become pretty unaffordable, and that's a big part of the CPI index. So we expect house prices to continue to be high. We expect insurance costs to go up. The forecast by Chicago Fed and some of the other people is that CPI will be in the mid-2s, not getting down to the 2% rate for the next year or so. And, you know, that's frustrating because it's just continued higher than Fed target. So it's a little bit of a challenge. We can expect rates to stay where they are. The unfortunate thing is we're not seeing mortgage rates come down that much. They're lower than they were when they were in the mid-7s, but it looks like they may settle at that high 5, low 6 range, and that just may be the mortgage rate going forward. A lot of people got used to that super low COVID rate, and that's not going to come back. The other thing is some of the short-term rates, like the credit card rates, are not sensitive to the Fed's adjustment. They're staying high. And credit card companies are saying, you know, we're seeing delinquency, we're seeing charge-offs, we're seeing the Federal Reserve and the federal government limit late fees and things like that. So we're going to keep rates, the actual interest rate, high. So unfortunately, that's going to keep the credit card rates higher than you might normally expect. So they probably will not decline at all.
And that has not stopped people from charging up credit card debt. We have record credit card debt despite the highest interest rates ever for credit cards.
We do, and we have a real challenge because our savings rate, the amount of money people save after everything, is trending downwards. And it's about half what it used to be a decade ago. So that presents a real problem going forward because the savings rate is what that's the capital base that we use to build things. And it also is a measure of how sensitive the consumer is to a potential future shock. You know, right now everything is sort of looking Goldilocks. The economy is strong. Unemployment has come back. Stock market is way up. But if there's any big shock, that could be a real problem. And unfortunately, the traditional method of the government spending more money may be off the table because the deficits are so unusually high right now.
Yeah, look at the markets right now. The NASDAQ, the S&P 500 is up 157. The NASDAQ hit a record high this morning. It's trading up 42. The Dow is up 184. Investors seem to be happy of late. All of the markets have been really strong. And here we are now, just weeks away from the election. In fact, early voting starts this week here in Louisiana. So the election's already underway in state after state. How much will the outcome of this election, do you think, impact the economy here locally and nationally?
It's going to depend on what happens. And obviously, that's the classic answer. If you get a sweep by one side or the other, there'll be a pretty dramatic change. If you get a split government, probably not so much. And that's the most likely outcome, is some sort of split. One of the unfortunate things is because there haven't really been many serious debates, probably the most serious debate was Waltz and J.D. Vance, you don't really know what the candidate's plan is. I think that both of them are saying, you know, we want to build an economy where hard work pays off. Well, that's wonderful. I think everybody in America agrees on that, but really very short on details. So until you see the details, you really don't know what the election outcome is going to do to the economy. The other thing is, if you are in the White House and you don't have your team in the House and Senate, then you have very little leverage to push forward your agenda. You have to actually compromise, which is not a bad place to be. It tends to be when the government,
I don't know. Compromise,
the economy works best.
Yeah, compromise is a dirty word. We now have more deadlock than we have compromise, at least in the federal government, with if we have a split in the White House and on Capitol Hill, it seems almost nothing gets done.
Yeah, and that's not forever. I mean, the good thing about the U.S. is we have elections every 2 and 4 years, so voters ultimately will get frustrated and they'll realize, okay, we need to pick a direction and vote that way, and then things will occur. You know, I'm always optimistic that there will be a positive change, and voters will at some point realize, okay, we've heard the slogans, but let's look at the action and let's see what really works and who's actually pursuing policies that make economic sense.
So you are hopeful that regardless of who wins the presidency here in less than a month now, that we should see a continuation of this soft landing and a relatively strong economy?
I think so. The challenge would be some big demographic, I mean, not demographic, but a global challenge and an unexpected event. Now, this is one of the most tense global times that I can remember in my lifetime, so I certainly wouldn't discount that and would be wary that I just wouldn't be as positive that the economy is going to be a Goldilocks economy forever. I'd be a little more defensive and a little more careful in my investing. But I don't think the U.S. is going to make a drastic change in economic direction, because I think there will be some sort of split between the White House and either the Senate or the House.
We're talking with Guy Williams, president of the Gulf Coast Bank and Trust, answering all of your financial and economic questions. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about what the impacts, if we're not going to see significant decreases again in mortgage rates, and we've seen this slowdown in the housing market locally and nationally, what does the future of real estate look like? We'll get Guy Williams to answer that question and your questions on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line at 504-260-1870. Anything you want to know from Guy Williams, he can handle your economic and financial questions here on the Newell Norman Show. I'm Dave Cohen, in for Newell Norman. We still have three lanes of the Crescent City Connection blocked, just as you get from the East Bank to the West Bank, crossing the Mississippi River, as an overturned truck and at least one other vehicle are involved. Emergency crews remain on the scene. Someone just asked if the HOV lanes are open. They are not open from the East Bank to the West Bank, so that is not an option. The ferry, the Huey P. Long, and the I-310, or wait it out. Hopefully they'll have things open soon. We'll be back with Guy Williams and your calls and texts after the...
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
You gotta take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
Yes. Right, a little bit of good news on the traffic front. I can see out my window now and in the traffic cameras we have, and I got a text that they just opened the HOV lanes for traffic trying to get from the East Bank to the West Bank on the Crescent City connection because traffic is not moving on the main span from the East Bank to the West Bank. This doesn't help you if you're stuck in that traffic, but if you've got to get to the West Bank from the East Bank now, you can get on the HOV lanes either by the Smoothie King Center or by the Convention Center and get to the West Bank that way. And the HOV lanes are moving very well, while the West Bank bound Crescent City connection is not moving at all. I'm Dave Cohen, in for Newell Norman. Guy Williams, president of Gulf Coast Bank and Trust, is with us this hour on the Newell Norman Show. Guy, we were talking about it a little bit before, but let's look deeper into the trends in real estate, both residential and commercial, here in Greater New Orleans and across the country, with you saying that it doesn't look like we're going to see significant drops in mortgage rates anytime soon.
No, one of the things that's happening is short-term rates are dropping. The Federal Reserve controls those. Longer-term rates are actually higher than they were at the start of the year and than they were 2 years ago. So the mortgage rate is tied to the 10-year Treasury, and so the expectation is that that will not drop much from where it is. Now, the mortgage rate is not bad. It's a pretty good mortgage rate. The challenge in mortgage is different. It's not the interest rate. It's supply. If you go all the way back to 1995, we had a national housing inventory of 1,580,000 homes. Today we have 800,000 homes in inventory. The median price was 114,000. Now it's 389,000. So we have a significant supply problem. People are not seeing enough new homes on the market. So areas that are growing, like Texas, Florida, which used to be growing, who knows how they'll come out of the hurricane, but the rest of the South, not enough supply. And so even with rates dropping, we're seeing home prices going up. And the unfortunate reality is, as we look in New Orleans, our market is beginning to see some real signs of stress. And what's happening is, particularly at the high end, we have expensive homes that are on the market for a longer time, period of time, with fewer offers and fewer people that are interested in purchasing. So as we look at our local residential market, we're seeing high-end homes on the market for longer, not much in the way of buyer interest. And so it really is a challenge. And I think part of that is linked directly to the fact that our population is shrinking. So every time somebody leaves, they were living somewhere, whether it was an apartment or a house. And if they're not replaced by a newcomer, you actually have one surplus unit. And unfortunately, without people coming in to buy the higher priced homes, we're beginning to see an overhang on the market with longer days on the market, particularly at the top end.
So inflation is a factor, population being stymied and limited to no population growth. And is that really why, though, people just aren't putting their homes on the market and why we don't have the inventory, why people are not selling?
Well, there are a couple of reasons. It's hard to build a new house economically. We have a shortage of houses in the, 250 and below range, but it's very difficult for builders to build those homes at a price that where they can make money. Because as we talked about earlier, the building price inflation has been substantial over the last few years, 20 to 25% in just all the different things that go into a house, the building materials, the copper, the sheet piling, the plumbing, all the different things are more expensive. Labor is more expensive, and there's a shortage of the skilled laborers to do that sort of work. So we have an increased supply, either in New Orleans or anywhere else, and the materials are more expensive. So you have a real price pressure, and it's not easy to build tract homes in vast numbers like we used to do in the United States.
So it's not just an existing home shortage on the for sale market, but it's the new homes as well.
Yeah, and for the first time, the existing homes are selling for about the same price as new homes. Part of that is builders shrinking the size of new homes. And that, of course, makes sense. We've had a trend for the last two decades of bigger and bigger new homes. Well, that has run into buyer resistance and also into cost resistance. So it used to be a big advantage buy a new home. You get newer appliances, newer amenities. Now you may be facing a home that's a little bit smaller than the existing home inventory, and the price advantage is definitely not there. So that's caused a real challenge, particularly in the local market, but also nationally, of homes just not creating enough homes to meet the demand.
So what does the future look like both for the commercial and for the residential real estate markets?
Well, we'll move to commercial in a second. Residential is a challenge because residential zoning is something that's controlled locally, either by the parish, the county, the state. And through the last three decades, there have been more and more restrictions on residential construction. And then you add homeowners associations that add another layer of restrictions. So we've made it more difficult to buy a house. New Orleans is an example of a city with a lot of odd leftover lots. Because of our shape, if you look at a map of New Orleans with the river cutting through and streets going at odd angles, we're anything but a grid. And so there are a lot of leftover little lots, triangular lots, that can't be built upon because we haven't zoned them appropriately. This would be a great time locally, both in Orleans and Jefferson, to say, we'd like people to build on these smaller lots, build smaller houses, maybe 700-800-foot houses as starter homes or retirement homes, and take advantage of the property. We don't have excess land in New Orleans, but we do have some excess leftover lots. So unless there's a change in zoning, it's going to be very difficult to solve that problem. The building materials are not going to come down in price. As we've talked about inflation, that's just baked in that the cost is higher than it used to be. The insurance cost is going to be higher. But there is the other variable, which is the house size, which can be adjusted, and the variable of not adding extra cost with bad zoning decisions. So I think some municipalities will move in that direction. If they do, it'll encourage the others. So on the residential side, we need some help in that area.
Yeah, and no doubt on the North Shore, in the meantime, we're seeing still new subdivisions going up left and right. I know that there's some restrictions in St. Tammany about lot sizes and density and things like that. But over in Tangipahoa, for example, we see new houses literally growing out of the ground daily in these new subdivisions. And so a kind of a tale of two sides of the lake.
You're exactly right. And it's interesting because of the trend in commuting, the New Orleans Metropolitan Statistical Area, the MSA, does not include St. Tammany anymore. Because in order for it to be part of the New Orleans metro area, 25% of the people would have to commute every day from St. Tammany to Orleans. Well, that's not true anymore. Either people are working at home, they're working on the North Shore. So it makes our MSA different, and it creates a new St. Tammany MSA, which is growing, although unfortunately it's not making up for the loss in population in Orleans and Jefferson.
So now turning our attention to the commercial side of the equation.
Yeah, commercial is a whole different thing, and one of the we'll start with the worst area of all, which is office buildings. Because of the work-from-home trend, we probably nationally have 30% more office space than we need. And that is a big challenge. Now, there's some cities like New Orleans where offices can be repurposed as hotels. And if you go through the CBD, you see an awful lot of former offices are now hotels. But some office buildings, because of their design, aren't suitable to be converted to hotels or apartments. And those are going to be very challenging to reuse because if you go to one of the big buildings, whether it's Place St. Charles or One Shell Square, the statistics may say that they're 80% occupied or 75 or even 90. But if you look at the food court and you look at the elevators, nobody's there, particularly on Mondays and Fridays. So what is happening is as those leases come due, the tenants are either getting substantial rent reductions or they're reducing their space requirements, which puts a lot of pressure on landlords because if you don't need that space, then there is a challenge for them because without new companies moving in, what do? So we're seeing a dramatic drop in the value of existing office buildings, particularly in areas that aren't growing. And unfortunately, CBD New Orleans is one of those areas where the value of existing office buildings is going down because of decline in occupancy.
So what does that mean for the future? I mean, we know the pandemic substantially changed things, and I can tell you from personal experience that the very first question that hiring managers tend to get from applicants now is, how often do I need to come to the office? How much of this can be done from home? How much of my job can be hybrid? And this whole work-life balance that employees are trying to achieve, definitely, I don't see that trend ending anytime soon.
No, I think workers that are in in-demand positions are definitely taking advantage of that, and they're saying, look, if I can't do a hybrid job or an out-of-office job, I'm going to go work somewhere else. So the most skilled workers are taking advantage of that and getting that sort of deal, and it's very hard for employers to resist. You know, even companies like J.P. Morgan Chase, which built a beautiful new building in New York and said that everybody has to come in. What they're seeing is a lot of people come in, you know, card in, and then, oh, I've got an appointment out of the building, and they don't quite make it back that day. And there really is a desire to not be in the office all the time. So I think that's probably going to be a permanent change. You know, it's something we didn't anticipate, but with the advent of Zoom and the different options to communicate electronically, there's not the need for everybody to be in the office. So that's going to cause the commercial space, particularly offices, to be in oversupply until we can radically reposition them. As I say, some can be hotels, some can be apartments, some may just need to be torn down.
Do you anticipate that? Do you see that coming as a trend across the country where skyscrapers are coming down to make way for different types of developments that don't require so much square footage?
Yeah, probably not the real skyscrapers because it's too they're too expensive to take down. But if a classic building that is essentially a full block, a very square design, not sort of mid-rise, 10 to 20 stories, those are very difficult to reposition as residential because you don't have enough windows compared to square footage. So buildings like that could end up being unnecessary and ultimately end up being torn down because that's what happens at some point. It's too expensive to insure, to maintain, and you wonder what's going on. I mean, if you look at our CBD, the old Whitney headquarters has been vacant for a number of years, and there have been a number of ideas. Well, it'll be a hotel, it'll be an apartment, it'll be residential. But as time goes by, the building becomes less and less valuable because just the effect of not heating and air conditioning, it gradually gets just more and more obsolete. So it's going to need new elevators, you know, buildings like that.
And yeah, and the Plaza Tower, the Plaza Tower pieces are literally falling off of that building, and there's just no market for anyone who really wants to spend what it would take to redevelop it.
Yeah, and that's a perfect example of a building that probably needs to come down. Just we need to start over and throw in the towel because it's been empty for a long, long time. And the cost at some point of renovating it into something. And the problem is Plaza Tower. If you renovate it into office that's not needed, you know, what's the purpose? And if you're renovating it into residential, but you're in a shrinking market, that becomes a challenge. If it can't turn into a hotel, and it's a little bit of an odd location for a hotel. It's not quite close enough to the French Quarter. So that could be a building that does need to come down because it just doesn't have an economic value.
Makes you wonder about the future of downtowns across the country over time. We'll pause right there. When we come back, we'll continue this conversation with Guy Williams, president of Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. We welcome your calls and texts at 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line. Someone does have a question about taking some profit from their 401k. We'll address that with Guy Williams and your calls and texts after this on WWL. Traffic is now a nightmare trying to get into downtown New Orleans. We told you earlier about a crash involving an overturned truck as you cross the Crescent City Connection from the East Bank to the West Bank. Well, it's still there blocking three lanes. Emergency crews and tow trucks are on the scene, but they haven't been able to clear it yet. And the backups now stretch all the way through downtown New Orleans and down the I-10 in both directions. So if you're trying to come in from Metairie, traffic is at a dead stop when you get to Carrollton trying to get into downtown. And if you're trying to come in from Gentilly or New Orleans East, you're going to be on the brakes and barely moving from Esplanade all the way to the Superdome and the split with the Crescent City Connection. So we'll keep you posted on that. But if you got to get downtown right now from Metairie, from New Orleans East, it's not easy to do. And if you got to get to the West Bank, the HOV lanes, the ferry, the Huey P. Long are going to be your options. I'm Dave Cohen in for Newell Norman. We're talking with Guy Williams, president of Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. Got two listener questions about 401ks. One person says, if I wanted to take profits from my 401k and move them into a money market available through the 401k, would that be a good way to limit my exposure to volatility? And somebody else says, I need some cash. Should I borrow against my 401k to buy a home to use to make the down payment? So if you want to address 401k issues, Guy Williams.
Sure. We'll start with prices on the stock market are all-time highs, whether it's NASDAQ, S&P. So there's a lot to be said for selling some stock, particularly if you're close to retirement. I wouldn't do a money market because those rates are going to continue to trend downward. But I would look at something like an intermediate bond fund or even directly buying U.S. Treasuries within your 401k. At longer maturities so that you take advantage of the rates now and you're not exposed as rates drop. But yeah, it probably does make some sense to take some risk off the table because it's hard to imagine that we have this kind of growth next year. You know, something is going to happen. We're priced for perfection and perfection just doesn't last very much, very long.
Should our 401k administrators be doing that by design? Should they be shifting around those investments as they look at our retirement target dates and rebalancing stocks versus bonds or other investments?
It depends. Some funds have what are called target date, where as you get closer to retirement, they start selling more stock and buying more bonds. But historically, that hasn't really been a great strategy because people are living longer, so they retire, and then they have maybe 20 or 30 years when they actually need to take money out of their 401k. So a good balance between stock and bonds makes sense. A balanced index fund that has stocks and bonds can make sense. But the 401k gives you, as the owner, the option to pick your investments. So it is a good idea to take a look at where you are and consider taking some risk off the table,
Particularly
if you are closer to retirement.
And if someone wants to borrow money or take money out of their 401k for a down payment on a house, what's your advice?
That is almost always a bad idea. And the reason is you pay a real penalty. There's a direct penalty, and then you pay income tax on whatever you take out. So most people that borrow from their 401ks don't end up repaying the loan in time, and so they're subject to those penalties. So
if you do pay it off in the five-year window, you're okay, but most people don't.
Yeah, the problem is if you look at behavior, it just almost never happens. Some people are disciplined to make it work, but unless you're confident you can do it, I'd pick another way to try and buy a house. And I mean, we're about at the point where we're beginning to see home prices decline because we have more listings, fewer buyers, longer day on market. The next thing that will happen is prices will begin to go down. So I think you could wait a little bit and probably pay less for a house than you've paid in the past.
Talking with Guy Williams, president of Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. When we come back, we're going to ask him about this strong stock market that we've been seeing and if that should change the way you invest beyond what he just told us about, we're probably not going to have this perfect market forever. So we'll continue the conversation about that with Guy Williams after this. Guy Williams, I got a text from a 73-year-old who's got to take a required minimum distribution by the end of the year from a 401k and an IRA and wants a quick suggestion of what to do with that money.
I would use that to buy some CDs and preferably go long 2 or 3 years so that you get higher rates than you'd get in the short term, because rates are projected to go down.
And what should investors do now that we have such a strong stock market, it seems, for so long now?
Rebalance. One of the real classics is you want to have a target, either 80% stock, 70%, 90%, whatever it is. But rebalance that portfolio if your stock value has gone up and buy more intermediate bond funds so that you're in balance with the target you set.
And finally, some concerned about the Boeing strike and the announced layoffs, that Boeing's going to start laying people off. What effect do you think that'll have nationally and here locally with the Boeing workers that are in the aerospace sector here in New Orleans?
Well, it's unfortunately a disaster for both the workers and the company. The company is losing money, $1 to $3 billion a month. They're one of America's export champions. And if things don't improve, there is a genuine chance that Boeing will have to issue stock, diluting their existing shareholders, and may not be able to continue as a viable competitor to Airbus. So this is a case where management and the unions need to get together and find a way forward that will preserve the company's competitiveness.
Think it'll have impacts out at Michoud?
Oh, yeah. And I was really upset when they said one of their problems with their space machine was poor quality at Michoud. And that just wasn't true. The guys at Michoud are doing a wonderful job. And I think that was just a cheap excuse for the fact that they had some problems with their orbiter.
Gotcha. Guy, we appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week here on WWL. Have a great week.
Oh, you too. Thank you.
Scoot's coming up next. What you got ahead for us, Scoot?
What the hell happened to the Saints yesterday? Well, we'll talk about that. Also, Election Day is 3 weeks from tomorrow. The Tigers won big. The Tigers move up in the polls, so we'll talk about that. I mean, what an ending to the LSU Ole Miss game in Baton Rouge.
Feelings Saturday and Sunday.
Oh my God, really? You couldn't help but be euphoric. I mean, LSU won that game. And, you know, at times during the game, it didn't look so good for LSU. You know, there was a time in the Saints game where things looked really, really good.
That second quarter was awesome.
Happened? Oh, my God.
You can't
happened?
Win just one quarter.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. We'll talk about Election Day. Who is saying what? Where are the polls right now with Kamala Harris and Donald Trump? And Al Pacino has become a father at the age of 84. Is that selfish? I'm not really sure how I feel about that, but we'll talk about that, too.
Kid will graduate high school when he's 102. How about that? Thank you. Scoot's up next. Still got that big problem on the Crescent City Connection. Traffic is a mess getting into downtown.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.